Reading from Sri Bhajan Rahasya by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Continuing to discuss the fifth shloka of Shikshastakam, Ayi Nanda Tanajakankaram Patitam Mam Vishave Bhavamado Kripaya Tava Parapankaja Stita Duli Sadrisham Vijintaya, wherein Radharani, in great separation from the Lord, immersed in the deep mellows of Mahabhav, while confined in a small room known as Gambira in Puri, Radharani cries out from the core of her heart, "O Nanda Nandan, please, please, please save me. I'm drowning in this terrible ocean of repeated birth and death. Please lift me up from this ocean of material existence and keep me forever fixed as an atom on the dust of your lotus feet." And it's a very humble petition for any service connection with the Lord from the most exalted of all devotees, Radharani, who is entitled to the most exalted relationship with Krishna. In her mood of separation, she's begging for even the most insignificant position in relation to Krishna, because there can't be any more insignificant position than the bottom of the feet and to be a speck of dust. And Radharani is only requesting that, nothing more. She's not even asking. And this is called Shantaras. A speck of dust lying in the feet, what is that? What act of service, of pleasure, is a speck of dust giving you? What intimate friendship can you have with a speck of dust? What type of nourishment or chastisement or correction of a mother or father can you get from a speck of dust? What kind of intimate conjugal pleasure and happiness can you get from a speck of dust? Nothing. So Radharani is praying, just keep me as a speck of dust. Radharani, who is in Mahabhav, in the Gambira, she's praying for Shantaras at the feet of Nanda Nandan. It's inconceivable. So this type of humility often comes up in separation. And that type of humility we are supposed to also adopt and develop, because we are extremely separated from the Lord. Absolutely separated. We're in the most remote corner of the universe, crying out from the deepest regions of the universe. Radharani was crying out from the depths of the Gambira. And the Gambira is only a room in the part of a house of Kashimisha, but we're in the bottom of the universe. We're in a deep, dark well, Grihamandakupam, Grihastha life, or any life. We're all suffering in the corner of this deep, dark place called the material world. And Krishna's way up there in the world of light. He's way up there in the world of light. So the Vedanta tells us, Tamasimam Jyotirgama. Tamasimam Jyotirgama, that we are living in a world of Tamasi. Tamasi means abject darkness, total blackness. That is the material world. There's no light here. It's a totally dark place. All the light of this world comes from outside the world. If the sun were to disappear, we'd realize how much darkness there is. Complete darkness. The sun is the cause of all light and all fire in this world. All oil, coal, gas, fire, everything is actually derivative of the sun. Without the sun, there would be no fire or no light on this planet at all. Because the sun gives life, and life from life, you know, we get wood, and wood makes fire. So all this fire, wherever you find fire or light, it's coming from the sun. So we are in the darkness, and Krishna is in the light, Tamasimam Jyotirgama. So we have to come to the light. So Radharani is praying in the darkness of separation for the light of Nanda Nandan's lotus feet. It's considered that the toenails of the Lord are shining like so many moons, like 10 moons shining fully and brightly and beautifully to illuminate the darkness of the heart of the devotee. So when we place the lotus feet in our heart, then that tamasimam, our darkness becomes removed by the splendor of his lotus feet. And this is what bhakti is all about at the stage of attachment. One becomes attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore his life begins to fill with light. And then he experiences great happiness. We have collected some notes which we forgot about, and I just collected over the previous verses that we discussed a few days ago in this presentation of the secrets of Kinkari Bhav, because the Sakti is all about seva. You can only be attached to someone that you love, or something that you love or like a lot, then you become very attached to it. So our object of our bhajan, our bhajaniya, is Krishna. And we are trying our best to become attached to him. We are trying our best to love him, although we don't love him and we're not attached to him. But we're trying. So the gopis aren't trying, they have natural love. They have natural love, natural liking for the Lord. That's called rag. They're called ragatmika. Ragatmika. What is atmika? Atmika means their body, their mind, their senses, their self. They're from inside to outside. There's no difference between their flesh and their soul. Like the Christians say that the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. I really want to be a good Christian, but I have all these material desires and all these aspirations and all these wants. But the gopis inside and out is only seva, 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 more seva. Anyur, 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 anyur. More seva. So in this verse in the 10th canto, chapter 29, verse 38, it concludes by saying dehi dasyam, that the gopis are saying, listen, we gave up our family, you called us with your flute, we've come to the forest in the middle of the night, we've left everything, and all we want is to be your servants, we want to give you happiness for you. Every pore of our bodies burns with the desire to please you and to satisfy you. So we're only begging you, dehi dasyam, dehi dasyam. Dehi means please, 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 please. As children beg their mothers when they want something, they repeatedly say, please, 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 please. And the mother says, all right, all right, enough. So they're saying, dehi dasyam, please make us your maidservants. So this is, even the gopis are begging Krishna what to speak of us. Of course, they're standing right next to him. And they're also crying. And they're drawing little circles on the ground with their toes. And they're in all shyness. And they're begging Krishna for service. So we discussed this verse about 3 days ago. And we have some notes there. Radhe, Radhe. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Radhe, Radhe. Avi Pravachan. Pravachan. Thank you. This voting, elections going on. Radha Rani ki.
Jai.
Vrindavaneshwari ki.
Jai.
There's one Ishwari. Eki Ishwari Radha Rani. Radha Rani. So here we collected one note here in this text, 194. It says, when Gopi Bhav actually arises in the heart, then we must take shelter of Rasik Vaishnava. And here Srimad Bhagavatam Shlokas, where the Braja Gopis are speaking the glories of Krishna in separation and meeting. So we can say when Gopi Bhava arises, of course Bhava, it's a very high state of Krishna consciousness. We can say Gopi Bhava or the interest in Gopi Bhav. Then it's absolutely essential that we associate with advanced devotees. And here the Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, if we read it carefully, which we usually don't, we don't even read it at all, but if we read it carefully, we'll see that Rupa Goswami is listing 64 limbs of devotion. And then after the listing 59, even in the context of 59, he lists these five. But then again he repeats these five. At the end, from 60 to 64, these five limbs, he's saying, this is Panchanga Bhakti. And he says, anyone who follows one of these can attain perfection in Bhakti. So there he says, Bhagavat Shravan. And specifically, he says, hearing the 10th canto. Bhagavat Shravan means hearing Bhagavatam. So oftentimes people say, Nitya Bhagavat Sevaya. Because in the Bhagavatam itself, in the first canto, it says, Nashta Preshu Bandreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavat Yutamashaloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtaki. That Shukadeva Goswami is saying, if someone every day serves the Bhagavatam or serves a Mahabhagavat devotee regularly, Nitya Siddha, and he serves him every day, then what will happen? He'll become Nishta. He'll develop steadiness in Bhakti. He'll rise from Anartha Nivritti and come to Nishta. And a Bhadrani, of course, naturally, when one is performing sadhana bhakti, then his life becomes full of auspiciousness, shubhada, and kleshagni. He becomes free from misery and unhappiness. So these are the symptoms of nishta. When one's at nishta, these things are very much prominent. These four aspects of shubhada, becomes pleasing to everyone, becomes happy, decorated with good qualities, and everyone is happy with him. and he's happy with the world. So this is what happens at Nishta. But that's hearing Bhagavatam, any Bhagavatam, hearing. So Shukadeva Goswami is saying that, regularly hearing Bhagavatam. But when Rupa Goswami is talking about Bhagavat Shravan, he says specifically 10th canto. You hear the 10th canto, then hearing the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he emphasizes the 10th canto, you will get Krishna Prema very quickly and very easily, only by doing this. Understanding that principle, when Srila Prabhupada began his spiritual movement of ISKCON, one of the first books that he printed in English was Krishna Book. Krishna Book is 10th canto of Bhagavatam. And it was translated in 1968 and printed in 1969. So it's one of the foundational books of this institution. And therefore, now Shukadeva has come. Sri Shukavacha, the parrot of Radharani. Radharani has a pet parrot named Shukshmadi. Shukshmadi and Manju Bhashini. Manju Bhashini. Bhashini means language or speech, and Manju means very charming and delightful. Manju Bhashini. So when we hear the parrot, then our ears immediately go there. Mm-hmm. So nice, so charming. Manju Bhashini. Maybe he was saying Saibat, Saibat, Saibat. Saibat means you're, yes, Swamiji, you're speaking truth. Saibat, Saibat, Saibat. This is true. So when some interest comes to follow the moods and mellows of the gopis of Braj, we develop some slight rag or some attraction, then it behooves us to take shelter of advanced devotee and in his association or her association, hear the shlokas of the 10th canto, and not Dwarka Leela, but specifically Vrindavan Leela, and specifically the shlokas that the gopis are speaking in separation from Krishna and in meeting Krishna. It's called Vipralamba and Sambhog. These are two sides of one river. The river is known as Prem Nadi, the river of Prem, and it has two banks. Bank is called Kula. Kula means bank, like we say, Pratikul and Anukul. So Anukul means to be on the same bank. When you're on the same bank with someone, the same bank of the river, then it's very easy to relate with them and speak to them. But if you're on the opposite bank, if you're on one bank of the river and you're on one side of the Ganga on one bank and they're on another bank on the other side of the Ganga, it's very hard to have much relationship, maybe half a mile separating you. So this Anukul means to be on the same bank. So these are two banks of the river, the Prem Nadi, the river of Prem. So wanting to follow the gopis means wanting to follow their moods, and their moods, the river of their Prem has two banks. One is sometimes they're meeting with Krishna and Sambhog, and sometimes they're separated from Krishna and Viraha or Vipralamba. So this is what these verses are all about. And these verses where the gopis are speaking when they're meeting with Krishna are separated. In these verses, they're revealing their bhav. What is their dasi bhav? Their kinkri bhav. And this kinkri bhav is what we're aspiring for. Because this bhav is what determines or what gives shape to our body, as we mentioned yesterday. As it's told everywhere, 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita. And also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's teaching to Arjuna, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, yajit yanti kalevaram. If we give up this body, and we get our next body, how do we get our body? By the bhav. Bhav is like the analogy I used yesterday, remember? That was the analogy I used about bhav. Yeah. Anyone remember about the marble and the chipping marble? No one, everyone was here, but not here. Maybe. No, I think it was in this class, yesterday or the day before.
It was not yesterday. It was creation, a marble.
About, you know, someone carves a deity. He has in his mind some idea, and he takes a piece of marble and he chips it, and then he makes a murti of Krishna. So, anyway, I'll tell it again. Maybe you weren't here, or it was another class, or I was speaking in my dreams or something. Maybe I was dreaming I said it. But this, our meditation is like our mind is like a piece of marble. And the feelings and sentiments that we're cultivating in life, they're like a carver, what is called a stapati, or someone who's carving marble. So our mind, as we're thinking and feeling different ways, those feelings are like someone chipping away a piece of marble. You have a big block, you have a big piece of marble, and the person has in his mind, he says, I'm going to make a deity of Krishna. So then that's in his mind. He starts chipping. And this big square block of marble, pretty soon there's arms and legs and a head and the whole deity. And then it stays like that once it's made. It doesn't come back to be marble again, a block of marble. So our mind is taking the shape of our thoughts. Our thoughts and our feelings are like a carver. They're carving and chipping away our mind. And then when the shape is there, so that's what Bhav does, what our sentiments and our Bhav does, it shapes our mind. Our mind takes the shape of our Bhav. Then in the next life, when the soul leaves this body, it carries the mind with it. And the mind has that carving, has that murti, mana murti, that deity in the mind. Like they say, we read that there are 7 kinds of deities you can worship. You can worship a deity made of metal, made of Daro Brahman, made of wood or metal or stone. You can also worship Manasamurti, deity in the mind. So this murti is made by our bhavas. So when the soul leaves, the subtle body carries the soul, the mind, intelligence, and ego. So the mind already has that shape. So the mind carries that shape, determines, that bhava determines the next body. So generally one is meditating on the opposite sex and has so many feelings for the opposite sex, so many attachments and sentiments and bhavas. So the mind takes shape around that, those bhavas. So a man's mind, or so-called man, but takes shape around woman. So when he dies, then he gets shape of woman. Or at least that bhava is there. Maybe woman, dog, or whatever, depending on his sins. But that happens. So in this bhajan, our body will be created by our bhava, whatever our bhavas are. So this kinkari bhav, i.e. nanda tanusha kinkaram, we develop the bhava, the feelings and sentiments. First the bhava, then the body. Not first the body, then the bhava. First has to be the bhava, the actual feelings. Again, that's permanent. Because once that carver takes a piece of marble, a big block of marble, makes a deity, he can't make it back to be a piece of block of marble. It will stay the murti. So once our mind takes, attains the level of bhava, and that's called sthayi bhava. This actual bhavas that we have, this permanent bhavas, this permanent sentiments and feelings of how we specifically want to serve Krishna, which appears to us, it doesn't go back again and become a square block of marble. That's sthayi bhava. That's why I say sthayi. Sthayi means sthan, means place, means fixed, permanent bhava. Like Sri Krishna says in Gita, once one attains the spiritual world, punar janma navidyate, he doesn't again take birth. Once we attain sthayi bhava, you don't come out of that. Once that Krishna murti is made by the stapati, it doesn't again become a block of marble. So once sthayi bhava is established in the mind and heart, it never changes. So we may have this body of a man or a woman, but when we attain the sthayi bhava in Madhura Rati and Bhavalas Rati, or a sthayi bhava of Manjri and Madhriya bhava, we're not going to change that. It's not going to come out. The body externally may be a man's body, but inside it's the sthayi bhava of Gopi. So then that sthayi bhava will attract the sthayi bhava of the Gopi's hearts, and then they will energize our sthayi bhava. That's called Sarup Shakti, will descend and mix with our hearts, mix with our bhava, and give shape. They will be so pleased with our bhava, with our feelings and sentiments, that they will, you can say, illuminate our heart with their Surup Shakti, which is Ladini and Samvit, and then that Shakti will give us Siddhadeya, will give us actual Siddhadeya. That's called realizing the Siddhadeya at the level of Bhava. So first the Bhava, then the Siddhadeya. Then in that Siddhadeya, with those Bhavas, then one enters the pastimes of the Lord and serves side by side with the Nitya Ragatmika Janas, because he is akin to, or he is Tanatmika with their Bhavas. So this is the progressive path of bhajan, by which we follow the line of their bhavas and develop their bhavas and rise through the platform of nishta to ruchi to asakti to bhava, and then prema. Then when all that's in place and we leave this world, enter Boma Vrindavan, take birth from Boma Gopi, and we get Gopi Deha. And then the bhavas are with us, and those bhavas become more refined by associating directly with Lita and Rupa, etc. And then we have our first opportunity for rendering Sakshat Seva to Radha in Boma Vrindavan. So this is some notes we have. Without the association of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which he's giving us in Bhajan Rahasyam, we can't actually understand Rupa Goswami's teachings and chant Hari Nam. There's three requirements to do bhajan. These are three requirements to do bhajan. One is that we have to worship the dust of the lotus feet of Radharani. This is told in so many places. The second is we have to take shelter in the physical land of Braj. And the third is we have to associate with Vaishnavas in Sringar Ras. The place of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's bhajan is called Swananda Sukhada Kunj. It's actually located on a floating island in the middle of Radhakund. Swananda Sukhada Kunj, Swananda Sukhada Kunj. This is a Seva Kunj. Every Manjari will have a Seva Kunj, where she renders personal service to Radharani and Krishna. Everything is personal, everything is individual. It's not all one. This is not Mayavadi conception. It's not all one. The house of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is situated out here in the northern side, but actually he's coming in a line of Ananga Manjari. He's in Nityananda Parivar, coming from Janavar Ananga Manjari. And his Seva Kunj is called Swananda Sukhada Kunj, which is located in Nangamandri's island Kunj, which is floating in the middle of Radhakund. But because Bhaktivinoda couldn't make his Bhajan Kutir in the middle of Radhakund, he made it down the road a little bit. I think he must have all visited Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house over there on the north side. So this dust of Radharani's feet, I said there's these three elements of requirements to do bhajan: worshipping the dust of Radha's feet, taking shelter in the physical land or this land of Vrindavan, and associating with advanced devotees in Sringar Ras. So what was prayed for by Uddhava, by the queens of Kurukshetra, by Brahma, and the queens of Kurukshetra when they met the Braja Gopis? This is told in Bhagavatam. Before, when the queens of Dwarka, they were in Dwarka, they were somewhat envious of the Braja Gopis. Not somewhat, but quite a bit. Satyabhama and Rukmini. Because every night when Krishna was sleeping in Dwarka, can you imagine, you're living with someone for 100 years, and he's your husband, and he never once mentions your name. He never once mentions your name. It's pretty much difficult to digest. And not only that, but when they were sleeping at night, or Krishna was sleeping in his bedroom, and sometimes the queens, they would be rubbing his feet as he would go to sleep or whatever, and then Krishna would fall asleep in his happy repose, then he would, middle of the night, he would say, Priyaji, oh Priyaji, oh Shama, oh Priyaji. Oh Shama, oh Radhika. And Satyabhama is rubbing his feet. Priyaji, Shama, Radhika, who's that? So then one day, of course, the story is there in Brahmavart Puran and other places. They met with Rohini, Balaram's mother, because Balaram's mother had lived in Mathura and also in Braj. And so they asked her, they said, listen, do you know anything? Who is this Priyaji and this Shama and Radhika? So then they told her, and that story of Jagannath and Balaram and all this whole story is there. So when, obviously, women, there's one thing women don't like, is that's competition. So when they heard about these Priyajis and Radhikas, they weren't very happy. They were rather envious. But so they had this feeling in their heart, but when they all came to Kurukshetra, after so many long years, and they met the Braj Gopis there personally and saw them, and then they somehow cooled down. In the presence of the Braj Gopis of Kurukshetra, the hearts of the queens actually changed. And then you see there's verses where they're praying for the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna mixed with the dust of the Gopis' feet. So there's a whole description of all this, and how, and also this is explained in this Vidagdha Madhava, and also in Priya Bhagavatamrita about this Nava Vrindavan, which was where there's statues were made of the Brijavasis, and Krishna saw, Krishna went there and he saw a statue of Radharani. I don't know if you've ever read, but then he was doing Sringhara of the statue, and Rukmini was watching this, and then she could understand that there's something special, that Krishna has some special feelings for the gopis. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's putting all these kind of feelings of the gopis are being presented here in this fifth shloka. Ayananda Tanasha Kinkaram. Actually, these notes I took a long time ago. And these were notes I had on these verses, which I took last year. But I think I'll just read from the book and comment. Whatever comes up. Forget about that. So, because these verses themselves are so good. And we'll just continue there. This is another verse where, from the 29th chapter, 10th canto, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining further about Parakiya Bhav, about Kinkari Bhav. Now he's talking about the superiority of Paramar love, or Parakiya Bhav, of the gopis. Because Kinkari Bhav means the gopis of Braj. And they were not married to Krishna. They were married to others. But they had this intense mood of Paramar towards Krishna. So this is a verse from 10:29:33. Kuravanti hi toiratim kushala swatman nitya priye pati sutaribir arti dekim tanna prasida parameshwarama svachindya ashamdritam toichirat aravinda netra. So the gopis said, O Paramatma, the great personalities who are the well-wishers of everyone's soul direct their love to you, because you are the soul of all souls, Parameshwar. What is the use of loving or serving our husbands, sons, and so forth, who are temporary sources of misery? Be pleased with us and give us your mercy. O lotus-eyed one, Aravinda Netra, please do not cut down the flourishing creeper of our desire to serve you, which we have nourished for such a long time. So, this is 10:29:33. We can read also Vishnu's commentary. what his revelation is on this verse, because all these verses are to inspire us in our attachment to Krishna. Therefore us, although the gopis are sharing their hearts with Krishna, Bhaktivinoda is saying that their hearts are meant to be mixed, our hearts are meant to be mixed with their hearts. And in these verses, the gopis are inviting us to develop the same attachment that they have for Krishna. So this same verse, expert transcendentalists always direct their affection towards you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. What use do we have for these husbands, children, and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? Therefore, O Supreme Controllers, grant us your mercy. O Lotus-Eyed One, please do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association. That's the translation from 10th canto. Vishnu says that some other gopis strengthen their argument by citing the behavior of saintly persons in this verse. Because when they met Krishna, it's called the gopis meet Krishna for the rasa dance. When they met him, he said, "Oh, why have you come? Perchance you've come to see the beauty of the forest in the moonlight. Now you've seen it, why don't you go home? Well, and moreover, it's not a very safe place. And after all, it is the dead of night. And you are young ladies with sumadhyama, very thin and attractive waist, and I am a young boy. So what will people think? And how can we trust each other in a situation like this?" So he was trying to induce them to return home in so many ways. And now they're trying to argue their case. "Now listen, you know, we've come here only for you, Dehi Dasyam, please make us your maidservants." Now they're saying, "Well, even great yogis and great rishis, they're always meditating in Paramatma, and they've given up everything to do that. They've given up their families and homes and societies, and they've gone off to the mountains and living alone in caves and living austere lives. So what's wrong if we're also directing our attention toward you, and we also want to love you? So don't cut down our long-cherished hope." So Vishwanath, he imagines the gopis are saying like this: "Anyone who develops love for you, who are endowed with 8 good qualities, is not defeated by the enemies such as lust, just as the followers of Vishnu are not defeated by the demons." We heard this from Garga Muni. Yeah, this is in 8th chapter. Ya ates etasmin mahabhaga pritim kurvanti manavi naryo bibhavatyetan vishnu pakshan ivasura. Demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate. Mahabhaga. Because such persons are very much affectionate toward Krishna, they cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa or by the internal enemies, the senses. So Kamsa is certainly a demon, but the Brijbasis were never defeated by him or all his demoniac friends. They were knocked off one by one. Putana and Trinavarta and Shakatasura and Agasura, Bhagasura, Kaliya, they were all defeated. So even the enemies of the senses are like Kamsa's associates, attacking the baby of Krishna within our hearts. They cannot overcome us or defeat us. Those who have faith in this statement are truly intelligent, and those who are intelligent have love for you, says the gopis. This love is natural and eternally present in their hearts. You are the object of possession for them, and you are eternally the object of affection for them. Whereas the affection they have for husbands, sons, and family are only conditional, and therefore temporary. We do not have any such affection for these relatives. They only give us misery and trouble by preventing us from meeting you. This is the true confessions of a paramour. That my husband is just a source of trouble for me, blocking me and preventing me from meeting you freely. Because the gopis' love for Krishna, the gopis' relationship is with, their relationship with Krishna is based on love. Their love is not based on the relationship. You follow? In other words, a man, parents in India especially, the parents arrange a marriage. This boy marries this girl. So now there's a relationship established, Vivaha Yagya. Now they're officially legally married. And the one person becomes a husband, the other person becomes a wife. So now they have to try to develop love. So their love is based on relationship. It's called sambandha. But the gopis have no sambandha with Krishna. They're not married to Krishna. They're not his wives. So their relationship is based on their love. They're only together. They only associate with each other, and they only come together because love brings them together. Some people say, "Well, I can't stand you anymore, but let's stay together for the sake of the kids, or for society, or for our family, or whatever." So their relationship is not, their so-called love is based on a relationship. Relationship is not based on love. So this is why the relationships with Krishna are so strong. Mother Yashoda and Nanda are not the mother and father of Krishna. The mother and father is Vasudeva and Devaki. No, this is what Acharya is. Of course, we also can say that there's another. So, and then who is Balaram? Balaram is not Krishna's brother. He's the son of Vasudeva and Rohini. Their love is not based, oh, he's my brother, I guess I should love him. Just like you have some family situation. You may not like your brother or sister, but you say, well, he's my brother, I guess I should be nice to him, but I hate his guts. I hate his guts, I like to kill him, throw him down the stairs. You know, but somehow, you know, we live in the same, he has the same last name as I do, and he looks a little like me, so I guess I should be nice to him. Or she's my sister. So therefore, we're feigning or pretending some kind of love due to some conditional relationship. It's only a condition. It's temporary. It won't be forever your brother. When you die, then there's no more love, because the love is based on relationship. But the gopi's love is not based on relationship. The relationship is based on love, so whether they die or they live, they'll always love Krishna. Right? Because they're not connected by, oh, it's my wife, it's my wife, I should love her. It's my husband, I should love him. You follow? It's a very nice phrase we heard one Acharya explain. And this is the beauty of Braj. Braj only moves on the basis of love, not relationship. And Dwarka and Hastinapur, there's all relationships. And they're acting according to the relationship. So I'm a queen, I'm a king, I have to act like this, and this is my husband, I have to act like that. And I have so many dictates. But the gopis, they may meet with Krishna, they may not. Nothing is for sure, nothing is guaranteed. So it's free. It's free. My lover may come tonight, he may not. But in marriage, the husband's always there, the wife is always there. There's no excitement, there's no suspense. But in this paramour love, there's so much suspense. And the whole of Braj is like this. Everyone is in suspense from moment to moment with Krishna. The love is because everything's functioning in love. Will he come back? Well, he's not really my son. He goes out with the cows. Maybe he'll just go all the way to Mathura and not come back. Yashoda and Nanda. But you think if someone's your son, you think, oh, he went out playing. Surely he'll come home. He's not going to go to somebody else's house. He's my son after all. He'll come back here. But Krishna's not Yashoda's son and not Nanda's son. So when he wanders with the cows, she thinks, oh, he did come from Mathura. And maybe he'll go back there. So she's in suspense. And Balaram, he's not his brother. But there's so much love that they don't think anything else. The love is binding them. So love is much, much more binding than relationship. So this is the beauty of Braj. All the relationships are all based on love. And that's what Rag Marga is all about. It's not rules and regulations. And that's what this Mandri Bhav is called, Kamanuga. There's Sambandhanuga and Kamanuga. Kamanuga is this, it's also a relationship, but the emphasis is just the intense desire to love and serve Krishna, irregardless of any relationship. So, gopis are saying like this, these relatives give us mercy. What is the need of them at all? Therefore, be merciful and save our lives. You may not want to let the married gopis live, but why make the unmarried gopis cry? You already granted their desire when you stole their clothing and promised Sankalpa Viditi Sadhyo Bhavatinam Madarchanam. Oh, saintly girls, I understand your vow to attain me, and I will enjoy with you on future nights. The gopis rest their case there. Then Krishna may reply, I gave them mercy because of their worship of Katyayani. For what reason can I give you mercy? You are telling me to be merciful without good reason. The gopis pitifully beg, then give us your mercy even without any reason. O Parameshwara, you are under no one's control but your own, and are thus free to do anything you wish. At the very beginning of our youth, when we first caught sight of you, the seed of this creeper of our hopes known as Bhav was sent by your lotus-like eyes and entered through the openings of our eyes to become planted in the field of our hearts. So when Krishna glanced at them from the beginning of their lives, carrying in Krishna's glance was Bhava Bij, the seed of intense love. And that his glance carried that seed into their hearts, into the field of their hearts, then it sprouted. and started growing and growing. So we can pray when we take darshan of the deities, we can say, oh Krishna, please, will you glance at me? It's called Sudarshan. Sudarshan means a good darshan. A good darshan will be a darshan in which the seed of Baba is planted in the seed of our heart and in the field of our heart when we take darshan of Krishna. That's Sudarshan. That's good darshan. So the gopi, that's what happened when the gopis saw Krishna. So the Archamurti is also Krishna's form. Bhaktisiddhanta says in 11th canto of purport, there are five forms of the Lord and they're all equal. They all have the same power and potency, even the Archamurti. So when we take darshan of Shamsundar, then we say, oh Shamsundar, in your beautiful glance, or Radharani for that matter. Because when they bathe here, in Bahalastami, when Radharani bathed in Shamakun, she said, I will always take bath in the Shamakund, and I bless anyone who takes bath in Shamakund that they will have the same love, they will attain the same love that I have for Krishna or Sham. Then Krishna bathed in Radhakund, and he blessed everyone by saying, Radharani, first of all, he said, Radharani, your kund will become much more famous than mine. And obviously it is. Everyone's aware of that. You don't, there's no maps of anywhere where it's, in the maps it says Govardhan and it says Kunjara and it says Suryakund and it says Radhakund. No map says Shamakund. This place is Radhakund. This is a village of Radhakund. That's Krishna's prediction. So then Krishna said, I also bless anyone who bathes in Radhakund to attain the same love I have for you. So here we can pray, we can look at Radharani's eyes, and we can pray that the seed of Bhava to love Krishna like she loves Krishna comes in her heart with her glance. At the very beginning of our youth, when we first caught sight of you, the seed of this creeper of our hopes known as Bhav was sent by your lotus-like eyes and entered through the openings of our eyes to become planted in the field of our hearts. This creeper of desire grew by the process of hearing about your qualities and seeing your beautiful form. So this is how it happens. We get Sudarshan, then we water that seed of desire to love Krishna. We water that seed by hearing about Krishna, his qualities, his Krishna's guna, and continuing to see his beautiful form. According to Rasa Shastra, love develops in stages. This is in Rasa Shastra's, in Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra, which is often quoted, and the principles are utilized in Nectar Devotion and other works of the Goswamis. It says that according to Rasa Shastra, love develops in stages, beginning with attraction by glancing. I think everyone has heard the phrase in English, love at first sight. So this is transcendentally true also. When the gopis first saw Krishna, it was love at first sight. So love develops in stages, beginning with attraction by glancing, then meeting in the heart, and then anticipating desire develops. So meeting in the heart means that you embrace that object that you saw with your eyes and your heart by meditating. Heart means your chitta. You see an object, and chitta especially takes shape around visual objects. Although every object that we interact with in this world, visual, sensual, tactile, this olfactory, anything we smell or touch or taste, is registered and recorded in our chitta. It's recorded there, but the chitta itself actually takes a shape around visual objects. It actually wraps itself around visual objects. So visual objects are very, very powerful, and more so than other objects. So when we see some object that we have a liking, natural liking for, and then our chitta takes shape around that, our consciousness takes shape around that, then later we meet in the heart. Meeting in the heart means that we meditate, close our eyes and dream, or close our eyes and meditate, or just think, and we see that object, that person, in the core of our heart or mind. And by seeing, then, from contemplation of that object internally, then we start to anticipate. Anticipating desire develops. Oh, I must meet that person. So this is what happens. We see Krishna's form, and we wrap our chitta around his form. And that form is kept within our mind and heart. And then we recall that form and meditate on that form. And by meditating on Krishna's form, or Radha and Krishna's forms, then we anticipate a desire of meeting. This is the result, net result of Rupa Dhyan. Because Rupa Dhyan brings us into Leela. And you can't have Leela unless you have Darshan. So this meditation works like this. This is the facts of rasa, or love developing in stages. Attraction by glancing, meeting in the heart, then anticipating desire develops. The gopis continue, that creeper is now fructified. So why, while it is affording abundant fruits to be enjoyed, in other words, the creeper of bhav, which you placed in our hearts with, by the seed of your glance, has now grown up and produced wonderful fruits. Now these fruits, you planted this creeper, it's your creeper, it's your garden. You planted the mango trees in the garden. Now there's so many mango trees there that have grown up nicely. They produce so many fruits, and they should be harvested by you for your eating and your pleasure. Now what kind of crazy man are you? You plant this garden, and all these fruits are coming. Now you come with a chainsaw. You come with a chainsaw. And you cut down all these mango trees, which have 5,000 fruits in each tree, and you just smash them all on the ground. Is this, are you in your right mind or what? It's affording abundant fruits to be enjoyed and will give yet more fruits to enjoy in the future. Why should it be cut down with the axe of your harsh words? Your harsh words are, well, now you can go home. Now you've seen the beauty of the forest. Now you can go back home. Surely you must know the rule that one should never cut down a full-grown tree, even if it is filled with poisonous fruits. This thought is implied by two words, chindi and chirat. So this is actually told in the Dharma Shastras, which guide humanity in the various behaviors, Manu Samhita and so many other Samhitas. So it is actually a sin, a great sin, to cut down any full-grown tree, even if it's poisonous, which our caretakers of the Goshala may consider in future lives. They cut down a bunch of trees over there recently, full-grown trees. So it's not too recommended. even poisonous trees, if it's full grown, it should never be cut. So this is a very nice. When we read these commentaries by Vishnu Chakravarti, Hare Krishna, it's quite a lot of action today. Roddy. Anyway, we read these commentaries, and because now, Hare Krishna.
I didn't give you any message before we pick up for parikrama and.
Acha. Okay, nice to see you, Roddy. We're just finishing class. We have 10 minutes class finishing. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in this section, he's giving us all these very intimate and very confidential insights into the hearts of the gopis. And this whole chapter is all about the hearts of the gopis. And these are the hearts of the gopis are the type of hearts that we want to have. Bhav means heart. And our hearts have to take the shape of their hearts. Now our hearts are full of Kambhav and Artabhav. Kambhav and Artabhav means the sentiments of enjoyment. We are all basically enjoyers, or at least we think we are. Although it's false, a false identification, we fully embrace this idea for many thousands and millions of lives. So Artabhav and Kambhav. So what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is proposing here in this chapter on Nambhajan, the level of asakti, or attachment, is that we have to transform our hearts. We have to have a heart, what do you call it, blood transfusion. This is called, we have to change our hearts. What do they call it? They change hearts? Heart transplant. Yeah, thank you. We have to have a heart transplant. We all have serious heart disease, and it's called Purushabhiman. Purushabhiman means the mentality of being the enjoyer. So these verses are meant to do some heavy surgery. Some heart surgery. This chapter 5 is called Panchma Yam Sadhana from Bhajan Rahasyam. So these verses are very deep and extremely high verses that are all about Braja Prem at its topmost level of Mahabhav. And who are we and who are they? Who are they? They are the Braja Gopis. They are Srimati Radharani, the Astasakis and Manjaris. They're existing in Prem Dham, Vrindavan, and the Prakrit Dham, and relishing all these wonderful intimate exchanges of pure love, which is called Nirmal Prem, or pure love. Kanta Prem or Vishuddha Prem. And that's them, and who are we? We're swimming in the cesspools of material desire, covered with black soot and grime and all kinds of horrible, sticky, smelly things known as material desires. We're attempting to climb out of all this and enter the blissful realm of Sri Braja Dham. So this is the bhajan. We are meant to chant the holy name and read these verses and meditate on these verses, chanting and praying and crying, because this is what Mahaprabhu is doing in the Gambhira. Mahaprabhu is in Gambhira. Gambhira means very deep, very deep, very confidential, very secret. That's the word Gambhira. Gambhira. So this room of Gambhira is where he taught the most deepest secrets of bhajan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur entered that room. He's entered the Gambhira and he's extracted the secrets of Lord Chaitanya's heart. And he's put them into this book, Bhajan Rahasyam. So this is one of the secrets. The secrets of Gopi Bhav are lying in these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, and also in verses like this by Raghunath Das Goswami, Sankalpa Prakasha Stotra, which we'll read tomorrow. But further commentary on this verse. Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts this Bhagavatam verse in Bengali, which we'll just read out of respect for the Thakur. Tumi priyatma nitya ratira bhajan arti datta pati putre ratiya karan bharasya kari ainu tomara charan kamala nayana hera prasana vadan. So he very beautifully describes the same thing. Commentator tells us, after the living entity attains self-realization, his material relationships, such as those with wife and children, do not remain. Because this is what the gopis are saying in this verse from Bhagavatam. They're saying, listen, you played your flute, you called us to the rasa dance, we no longer care anymore for our husbands or wives. They're actually impediments to our bhajan. They're impediments to our loving service to you. And you are everything. And whatever else we have in this world is meaningless and empty and has no value anymore. So actually everyone in their own bhajan has to come to this level. It's not that the gopis ran away and with a backpack on their backs and a little portable mosquito tent and they moved into the forest in Vrindavan and lived there and then picked flowers and berries all day and danced with Krishna all night. They didn't do that. They went home before sunrise every night. They went back to their homes. They played the role. They played the part of being the wife, the mother, whatever. But they were totally unattached. And they're only thinking, this wife, this husband, this house, this is all impediments to my bhajan. It's all impediments and blockages and obstacles to my bhajan. Anyway, let me do all these things, but my heart is burning. My heart is burning and hankering for the opportunity to meet my beloved. This paramour bhav, this parakiya bhav. So parakiya bhav is the essential bhav of anyone interested in ragmarg on the platform of Madhuriya Ras and Manjari bhav. This is part and parcel of Manjari bhav, is parakiya, this muda parakiya. Parakiya means I belong to another. Parakiya means I belong to another. Swakiya means my own, belong to me. So parakiya means I belong to another. So this muda parakiya applies to everyone. Not only to a man, a married man or a man, married woman. It applies to a single man and a single lady also. I belong to another means I don't belong to this body. I, the Atma, I don't belong to this body. I don't belong to this society. I don't belong to Manipur. I don't belong to France. I don't belong to India. I don't belong to anything in this world. I belong to Radha. I am Radha's Sevadasi. I am a Palidasi of Radharani. I am a protected maidservant of Radharani. Property of Radharani, like you see these sweatshirts and people, property of San Folsom Prison. When you go into prison or jail, they give you some sweatshirt and a pair of pants and it's stamped on there with black ink. In case you want to run out of the prison, hey, that's our sweatshirt. This shirt and pants belongs to the prison. It says property of San Quentin Prison. So the gopis, the mandris, they belong to Radharani. That's why the Babaji's, and it's even told Babaji's, any Gaudiya Vaishnava, often they write on their chest, which I mentioned so many times. They take Chandan, Gopi Chan, or they take the dust from Tulsi, plant, or from Brajaraj, or from the Radhakund Miti, and they write on their chest, Sri Radha, or Radha, or Jainitai, or Gornitai. They write on their chest. This chest, this body belongs to Gornitai. It belongs to another. It doesn't belong to me. It's not mine. It's like we say, Guru Prasad. Guru Prasad. I belong to my Guru. So this mood of Parakya is very much essential to do bhajan as a mandri. So literally, Parakya means paramour love. I have my husband and I'm running away from my husband to be with Krishna. But it also means that I don't belong, you know, that I, the Atma, that I eventually, my Siddhadeya as a mandri, Siddha mandri, I belong to Radharani. It's called Sakigan. Lalita Sakigan. I'm in a particular Sakigan. Vishaka Sakigan, Sudevi Sakigan. I belong to them. There's no independent party up there. There's no Swakya party. Everyone belongs to this Sakigan or that Sakigan. He understands the futility of material existence and naturally becomes immersed in deep attachment for Krishna. At this stage, the jiva is no longer under the jurisdiction of rules and regulations. Engaged in rag marg bhakti, he performs exclusive bhajan of Radha and Krishna. At this point in the conversation between the Braja Devis and Krishna, the gopis say, "We have forevermore given up our relationships with husbands and everyone else, and have now come here before you. The love that appeared in our hearts as a sprout has since become a vine of desire that has grown very large. We have been attached to you since childhood and have sincere love and affection for you. Please do not cut down this creeper of affection." Or, the gopis say, "Our hearts have become naturally delighted by seeing your reddish lotus eyes, and we have already become your unpaid maidservants." So Krishna's eyes are in the corners are naturally slightly reddish. So this red in the corner of Krishna's eyes indicates the anurag. There's snehaman, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. So this intense attachment, which is newer at every moment. So Krishna's attachment in his heart for Radharani is so great that every time he sees Radharani, he sees her in a new way. And that anurag has a color, and the color is dark red. So the anurag, continually new attraction that Krishna feels for Radharani comes out of his heart and colors the corner of his eyes red. Because the question we asked, why is the corner of Krishna's eyes red and not the center? Because his heart is colored. Rag means color and also means attachment. So Krishna's heart is deeply colored by intense attachment to Radharani. So it's called anurag. But it comes out and says the corners of Krishna's eyes is red. So why is it the corners and not the center? Why doesn't he have red eyes like a mad bull? Yeah, the corner of Krishna's eyes is reddish because it's Krishna Kripa Kataksha. There's Radha Kripa Kataksha and Krishna Kripa Kataksha. There's two bhajans actually. One's called Radha Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj. One's called Krishna Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj. People usually only chant Radha Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj. But that pleases Krishna. When you chant Krishna Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj, that pleases Radha. When you chant both of them, then both of them come to see what's going on. If you only chant Radha Kripa Kataksha, then Krishna will come. Hey, why are you chanting about Radha? What's going on here? So Krishna, he's only looking for Radharani, looking at Radharani out of the corner of his eyes. So the anurag from his heart comes and resides in the corner of his eyes. Because if Krishna looking out of Radharani from the corner of his eyes, then just seeing the part of Radharani, then he forgets everything. And if Krishna wants to look at Radharani with his full eyes, then he would leave his body. He couldn't remain in this world. She's so captivating and enchanting. That's why she's called Madan Mohan Mohini. Because just with the corner of her glance, she captivates and enchants Krishna to no end. Even the acharyas, they explain that Radharani, she only looks at Krishna from the corners of her eyes, because the one corner of her eye, she's looking at Krishna. With another corner of her eye, she's looking at her rival sakis. And one part of her eye, she's looking at her superiors. And another part of her eye, she's looking at her own sakis. And paksha vipaksha, her elder relatives. And so Radharani's eyes are divided into four parts. One corner for Krishna, one corner for her rivals, and one part of the middle for her relatives, and one part of the middle for her paksha sakis, her own gopis. She communicates with them things, what they should do, and this and that. So I'll just finish this. The Braja Gopis say with rebuking words, "O lotus-eyed one, lotus flowers close at night. Your eyes are also half closed, and therefore deprived of the darshan of our youth and beautiful bodily features. So your having eyes is useless." Or they say, because they say Aravinda, Aravinda Natra. "We have understood your inner heart's desire. It is right for us to desist from taking part in your improper activities. So we will not stay here long. Please give up whatever desires in your heart." Because Krishna is telling them to go home, that they must have seen the forest and gone. And now they're replying, "So actually, we know what you're thinking. So you actually have the wrong desires. We have only came here to see the beauty of the forest. We're not interested in you." So this verse, and then the continuing verses, are this is showing the intensity of the gopis' attachment to Krishna, attachment to serve him and to please him, that are willing to give up anything and everything which is considered dear and important in life. And so if we want to become attached to Krishna at the level of asakti and nambhajan, we can take an instruction from this verse to increase our attachment to Krishna by learning to give up whatever is near and dear and important in our lives, and see that Krishna's service is the most valuable, important thing to attain, worth sacrificing everything else, including home and hearth, husband and wife, name and fame, gain, everything. So this is a conclusion here. We'll stop here if there's any questions or comments. Mundri? I'm always squeezing you for questions. Anyone? Anyone else? Mamyatma? You're absorbed in your Lila Smart?